Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Breakthrough Directions. Each week, Breakthrough Directions explores the two faces of your business, outward through marketing and client delivery, and inward, your vision, profit model, systems, team, and you, so you can grow a business you love and live the life of your dreams. Welcome to the show.
Well, welcome everyone to another episode of Breakthrough Directions here on Blog Talk Radio. I am the host, Gina Gaudio-Graves, the Dean and Founder of Directions University at directionsuniversity.com, calling in live this week from Bonita Springs, Florida, as I do each week on Tuesdays at noon Eastern. We have got yet another great show lined up for you guys today. We have my co-host, Linda Feinholt, the founder of the Breakthrough Academy at breakthroughbydesign.com. Linda's calling in live from Los Angeles. Hello, Linda.
Hello, Gina. I have been so excited waiting for today's show. You know, I met our guest nearly 2 years ago, and at that time I thought to myself, I know I want her on this show. We speak so often about what the characteristics are that create really successful entrepreneurship, and I cannot think of anyone better to bring into the conversation than Juliana Lutze Sherwood. She's the founder and CEO of Pure Style Girlfriends. It's a fashion solutions company, and we're going to be talking about that company and what it took to actually grow and turn that into a company that has products being sold now in thousands of retail outlets and channels in 16 countries across the world. Before starting that company, Juliana was the founder and CEO of Fire Solutions. It was the first e-learning and compliance technology company in the financial services industry. And you may be saying to yourself, what on earth does one industry have to do with the other, and how on earth could you possibly create companies in both? And we're going to be diving in and talking about that, because Juliana raised millions of dollars of capital and led Fire Solutions from inception to a multi-million dollar organization. That organization, under her tenure, trained over 300,000 financial professionals around the world. It was awarded the number one fastest-growing women-run company in American cities, as well as the Vendor of the Year in Financial Services for Excellence in Innovation and Service. And Juliana, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Linda. It's such a pleasure to be here.
You know, Gina and I spend so much time talking not only with our students, our clients, with, you know, folks we're sitting having business discussions with about what are the characteristics of entrepreneurship. And I would love, before we get into the nitty-gritty of running particular companies, to be able to share your insights from all of these years of literally rolling out of bed every morning with that entrepreneurial bug in you.
Well, it's certainly a bug. I don't know. Sometimes I think it's a termite eating away at you. But yes, well, in which capacity would you like to speak to it? I mean, there's so much really that goes into, as all of us know, I mean, both of you women are also very entrepreneurial and starting this incredible blog that's helping so many of us take our concept and turn it into reality. So would you like to talk about, you know, sort of the discipline? Do you want to talk about the strategy?
And what you know, I'd love like to dive into all of it. And let's start with, how old were you when you knew, what, even if you did know or didn't know the label entrepreneurship, that this was how you were wired?
Oh, sure. You know what? I know exactly the moment. I was, I was an undergraduate student at the University of Georgia, and I did a summer abroad exchange program, and I studied at Oxford University. And I was there at Oxford. I was working on all these papers, and literally there was like a six-week period where I never saw daylight. I was reading, analyzing, writing, reanalyzing, rewriting. And that last day when I was walking through campus to turn in my final paper, my final work, I was sort of reading through my printout as I was walking through campus. And all of a sudden, it hit me like a ton of bricks. This is good. Who would have thought? Who would have thought I had this in me? I didn't know I had this in me. And right there in the middle of Oxford, surrounded by all the wonder that encompasses a campus and a history like that, it hit me. I was meant to start and run companies. This is what I meant to do. And I said, well, clearly this means I'm going to have to get an MBA, and I better get my tail in gear when I get back to school. You know, here I was social chairman of my sorority and, you know, doing all that kind of stuff, made very good grades, but, you know, it was time to really kick it into high gear. And so I went back to school, immediately took calculus and statistics, turned out I aced all of those, and then went on to graduate school. I worked for a while in between undergrad and grad school, and then went back to get my master's at Georgetown. I have an MBA in global entrepreneurship with the specific intent of starting a company. And I began my first company when I was 26 years old. I started with an acquisition. I acquired a stockbroker training school, which I know sounds very like, oh, my God, how did you do that at 26? But I have to tell the story behind the story, because as entrepreneurs, we know that there's always something, you know, underneath the river current that gets deals done. And the story is, personally, is that my parents had started a stockbroker training school in the 80s, and it was a typical mom and pop. It did really, really well, and then it tanked. And it ended up really barely eking out any income whatsoever. I mean, it was virtually dead. And I wanted to help my parents, to be honest with you. And so what I did, my parents had since divorced, and at that point, through the divorce, my dad had given up the school. He was the teacher and really understood the content and whatnot, and my mom was more on the sales side, trying to bring in new clients. And so when they split, the business, was dead as well. So what I did is I went to my mom, and I said, Mom, do I have a deal for you? I want to buy this content, only the content. I bought the assets of the company. And I want to create the first e-learning business in financial services. Now, this is before the word e-learning existed. At the time, it was called online training. And then I went to my dad and I said, Daddy, do I have a deal for you? I want you to come and work with me, but I don't want you to do any of the stuff that you don't like. I don't want you to worry about the business. I don't want you to worry about sales. I don't want you to worry about marketing. I don't want you to worry about strategy. I don't want you to worry about financing. All I want you to do is teach. And then I went to my classmates. I was at Georgetown in grad school at the time. And I sent out an email to the entire MBA program. And I said, what are you doing Friday night for dinner? If you don't have any plans, come meet me in the student center. So like 20 guys showed up and two girls. And I brought Chinese food and a few bottles of wine. And I said, all right, everybody, let's get to work. And I put this entire group of brilliant MBAs to work converting this content, which was in a Word document essentially, into what would become the first e-learning curriculum. And we
worked
together.
You know what's marvelous about this story? I'm marveling at so many elements of it, because I think people imagine that the average entrepreneur is wandering down the street and out of nowhere the brilliant idea shows up. And yet when we pull back the curtain behind entrepreneurs, startup stories, and success stories, there's always an element that there was something in the world they were familiar with and saw a new opportunity with it.
Oh, I think that's absolutely true. And what you need to do as an entrepreneur is I always tell entrepreneurs, you can't go head-to-head with an elephant. So, for example, with FIRE Solutions, and FIRE, I should just say, is an acronym. It stands for Finance, Insurance, Regulation, and Education. And with us, we had really big competitors who had been doing securities training for 20 or 30 years, big national companies. One of them got bought by Kaplan. I mean, these were big, well-funded businesses. And so you can never, when I say go head-to-head with an elephant, it would have been extraordinarily difficult for me to compete head-to-head with Kaplan. How would I do that? I don't have the financing. I don't have the infrastructure. I don't have the teachers. I don't have the marketing. It doesn't make sense. Instead, what you want to do, and if everyone could do a visual for me, take your hand and sort of move your fingers out a little bit and put it down on your table. And if you look at that handprint, imagine that that handprint is the print of an elephant's foot. If you go head-to-head with an elephant, that elephant is going to squash you like an ant. You can't go head-to-head with an elephant. What you want to do strategically, which is, Linda, I think what you were driving at, is you want to go, if you look in between your fingers, between your thumb and your first finger and in between each of those fingers, each of those are market niches that the elephant cannot get to because the next step that the elephant takes is further out. So all of those spaces in between, as an entrepreneur, that's where we want to start because that's where we have an unfair competitive advantage. So for me, I wanted to help my family, right? I had this content. I had an instructor, but I wasn't going to go head-to-head trying to be Kaplan. So instead, what I did is I created e-learning in the industry and pulled together the various technical resources that I needed to do that. So I think that it's a very important component to launching a company. And it's the same thing that I did with my second business as well, Pure Style Girlfriends. You know, there's a ton of intimate solutions companies out there. My goodness, we all know them, Maidenform and Wacol and Victoria's Secret. I mean, the list goes on and on and on. The world does not need another bra, right? So what I did was I created in between the elephant's toes, I created solutions that go with those bras. So, for example, things like fashion tape that hold your bra straps in so you don't see them under your shirt, or modesty nipple covers so that if you don't want to wear a thick padded bra but you don't want to be a walking thermometer, you've got a little thin silicone cushion that you can put there to protect for that. So it's in between the elephant's toes where our market is. And from there, that's a launching pad to grow into the next thing.
And to also have the opportunity, if you want to create strategic alliances with the elephant whose toes you're operating in between.
Oh, certainly. Certainly. Although I always caution folks to be careful on that. I mean, the line between competitor and partner can be very, very thin. So if you can do a strategic deal with the elephant, that's fantastic. Just be aware and be very thoughtful in your strategy because it is very easy for big, powerful companies to say, I call it a fishing expedition. Tell me all about that strategy. Let me understand the finances. I'd like to understand how it works, whether it's technology or manufacturing or whatever. And then the next thing you know, they say, you know, that's a really interesting idea, but I think we're going to pass. And lo and behold, a year down the road, they come out with the same thing.
Right.
So, you know, you have to be really, there are certainly big deals that get done like that, but you want to make sure that what you're doing is not so easily replicated and that you're holding, I mean, it's my opinion, hold some part of the secret sauce back.
I love
it.
So
that it can't be easily knocked off.
So with Fire Solutions, what were the stages that you had to learn through and you had to take the business through to create the growth you envisioned?
Well, I would break that up by strategic area. So for Fire Solutions, that was a capital, it was a technology company, or it still is a technology company. I went on to sell that business. I sold it twice, actually. And it is still alive and doing well and growing, and I'm really happy about that. My father actually stayed, just to finish that story, my father stayed with me the whole time. He worked for me for, however long that was, 9 years, I think, and then stayed with the company and just retired last year, so that worked really, really well for all of us. So for Fire, that was capital intensive because of the technology. So what I did there is that's where I use partnerships. So, and that's actually, Linda, that's a great segue into what you were just saying a moment ago. I had some colleagues, professional colleagues that I knew, that had started an e-learning technology infrastructure company. They since went on to become publicly traded. The company's called Blackboard. And I called up Michael and Matthew, who are the founders, and I explained what I was doing, and we did a partnership. Now, that partnership, there was no concern about them stealing my company because they were a technology business and I was a content business. I needed their technology to run e-learning, but they also needed content to show how their e-learning technology worked. So that made a lot of sense. And so we did a deal with them for the technology. That's how we got our very first products to market. And then I always tell folks the smartest money you'll ever raise is from customers. Customers are brilliant. They know exactly what they want. They know exactly what they're willing to pay for. And if they don't like it, they'll pass. And that's who you need to listen to the most. They're much more strategic than any investor. So I started banging on doors. I went to Merrill Lynch and Smith Barney and Morgan Stanley, and I went back and back and back and back until I finally got our very first client, which was Merrill Lynch, to launch a pilot. And then now I had momentum. I had technology. I had content. I had assets. I had arguably one of the largest at the time financial services institutions in the world piloting our program. Then it was more credible for me to go and try to raise financial capital, which I did. I ended up raising multiple rounds of investment. I did a seed round with angels, and then I went on to raise 3 rounds of institutional money as well. So I would say, when you think about raising money, which I know a lot of entrepreneurs out there get really excited about, I always caution folks on that. It's a marriage. You're signing a contract with someone and you're giving them a big portion of your company, which means they own it. They get to have a say. They're going to call you up and say, let's do this, let's do that. Some of these ideas might be great. Some of these ideas might be a disaster. Either way, it's going to take a large amount of your time. I always tell folks when they start thinking about raising money, they can plan for the rest of the life of this business that they will be spending about a third of their time dealing with investors. Just block that time out because that's what it's going to be. If it's at all possible not to raise money, I strongly, strongly, strongly encourage entrepreneurs to do that. So while I was successful at raising capital, after I sold Fire and started PureStyle, I didn't raise another dime, nor will I. I'm very happy that we were able to work in a different strategic way to leverage assets and not bring in outside capital. So I think that that's an important stage to work through is your financing. How much money do you need? How are you going to use those proceeds? Exactly what are you going to do with that money? Because before you start giving away chunks of your business, you want to make sure that your return on investment is solid and that it's going to drive the results that you want and not just be a drain both on you and on the company's ability to grow. So I think that's one piece of it. Yeah.
The perspective you just shared is so critical because we're surrounded by media and information about how to use other people's money. There's so many different phrases for it. What you just shared about the fact that the smartest money is what's coming from your prospects, your customers, your clients is so important. I'd really love to spend additional time on that because here on this program, we talk so often about the importance of relationship marketing, relationships with your customers, relationships with your potential strategic alliances, relationships with your vendors, and so on, and how vital understanding relationships in order to market and conduct businesses. And I'd really love if we could spend even more time talking for a while about this notion of, because it's a real mindset shift to say
the smartest money, I'll say it again, the smartest money you'll ever raise is from customers. So what do I mean by that? I do not mean go ask your customers to invest in your business. What I mean is let me phrase it this way. Until somebody buys something, it's a hobby. It's not a business. It's a hobby. So make something. Make one. It doesn't have to be, you don't have to make a million. Make one. Make a prototype. And somebody, not your family, not your friends, like an actual customer, needs to buy it. Because you will learn from that. You will learn as you hear all the 100 no's out there, you will learn what they don't like. We call that overcoming objections. This is very, very important to you. You'll learn how to craft your product in the future. You'll learn how to, you'll say, oh, you know what, I thought I needed that feature, but nobody seems interested in that. Instead, they're asking me, why don't I have this other thing over here? I should spend time working on that other thing. I call this focused yet flexible, right? You're engaging with your customer. You're listening to them. You're asking smart questions. And by smart questions, I mean, if you could have anything in this category, we were talking before about fire solutions, and then we can give a different example in peer style just to sort of run the gamut of industries. With fire, when I went to Merrill Lynch, my first 6 months, every month I knocked on their door. Every month I had a meeting. And every month they said, oh, you know, this is really interesting, but it doesn't have, we want it's test-taking preparation. So they wanted the tests to be, they wanted more tests. So the next month I came back and I said, last time I had 3 tests. This month I have 30 tests. Wow, 30 tests, that's really good. Okay, well, we really like that, but, you know, it's 1,000 pages of content. That's really hard for somebody to be able to read online. Great point. I came back the next month and I said, now I have a printable version. And not only do I have a printable version, I have an executive summary. So they can just print out the 3 or 4, think of it like cliff notes, of each chapter for their highlights. Oh, that's a great idea. But how are they going to be able to highlight what's important? Next month I came back. Guess what? Now our text, when it's a really important point, is highlighted in red for you. We've done your highlighting. That's what I mean by listening to your customers. And guess what? They finally ran out of objections. And I ended up with a fabulous product. So that's what I mean by listening to customers. And I'll have to tell you, Merrill Lynch is still a customer of Fire Solutions, to my knowledge, to this day. And that Fire Solutions, I believe, still trains, at least, you know, when I was there and up to my most recent information, was training virtually all Merrill Lynch employees. So listening to your customers will guide you. But they can't say no, and you can't say, okay, thanks, bye. You have to say, why? What don't you like? How can I fix this for you? Does that make sense, Linda?
Well, it really does. This is Gina. And I love the stories you've shared, the insights you've shared, and it's exactly how my whole business came about. It's a matter of coming up with that first little idea that you're going to move forward with. And as you move forward, listen really hard and ask lots of questions, because they will tell you exactly what they want. And all you've got to do is respond. My first business was in the day trading arena. That whole business was something I didn't even think about starting. I was needing $40,000 a month at the time to cover my medication costs. I thought I was just going to be a day trader. But in order to get into day trading, I had to learn day trading. So I found a way to join these very expensive membership sites by going in and teaching something to their members every single week. And from that experience, teaching in 5 different rooms for an hour once a week, their members then begged me to open my own membership site so that they could get teaching 5 days a week instead of just 1. That seemed like a good idea. So I just listened and responded with a membership site that could only be joined if you were one of the first 5 site's members, because I didn't want to bite the hand that had fed me so well, right? I really wanted to serve these people that had served me. Well, that worked well for a number of years, but then my health started declining even more, and I couldn't keep up with the content. So I sold that business to another member. It was around for about another 7 years afterwards until the owner died. And I started my next business, and I thought my next business was going to be an internet ad agency, or so I thought. Within a couple months, people were starting to ask me for something I'd never heard of before. What they were asking for, they were labeling joint venture traffic. Well, I was an ad agency. I knew what traffic was, and I had been a lawyer before I even started my first business, so I knew what a joint venture was, but I didn't really know what the two terms put together meant. It turned out that what they were looking for was a joint venture broker. Well, I didn't know how to do that. I didn't know what that meant, but it seemed easy enough to figure out. This was back in 2000, 2001, as joint ventures was just becoming a popular thing to do online. So I became one of the first JV brokers on the Internet and did extremely well with that. And my entire business ever since, the last 14 years, has just been about listening to what the customers were saying, getting that feedback from taking a small step in a direction and then responding to improve it and really get in there and give them exactly what they want and need at the same time.
That makes perfect sense. I'm sitting here nodding and smiling, listening to you. And good for you. What a great story.
Thank you. Well, for our listeners, how do they come up with that first little idea that can set them off in the right direction to get the feedback from customers?
Well, I think inspiration comes from a lot of things. You know, I don't think there's a secret sauce to coming up with, you know, how to get your ideas, but a need, generally you're trying to solve a problem or fill a need, something that doesn't already exist. And it could be something, I always suggest that it's something that you're familiar with. So, for example, with Pure Style Girl, my first company, Fire, my parents had the stockbroker training school, so I was, you know, familiar with it from a family perspective. My second company, Pure Style Girlfriends, is about solving fashion disasters, wardrobe malfunctions for women. And guess what? I'm a woman. And I had lots of girlfriends. And so I got my girlfriends together. We were all in our mid-30s at the time. And I said, all right, girls, here's some champagne. Let's talk about our bodies. What bothers us? What do we like? What do we not like? What are we worried about? And from that conversation and a ton of laughter, I might add, I came up with what I now call the three S's of breasts. Sag, separation, and size. Right?
Are the three things that
those are the three things women often worry about as we, you know, go through life's changes. So sag is when our girls are heading south, and we don't want them heading south. We want them heading straight ahead. Separation is when we've got one girl facing L.A. and the other girl facing Manhattan, and we want everybody facing middle America to give us great cleavage. And size, because size matters, right? Some of us want them bigger. Some of us want them smaller. Some of us want them perkier. But whatever the issue is, and so those are, I listened. In that case, I listened to my girlfriends. And then I started talking to an army of women around the world. And guess what? Women around the world of all ages all have the same types of concerns. And so that was how I started Pure Style Girlfriends. Since then, I've patented multiple products. I have a tape that lifts a woman's breast by 2 inches without wearing a bra. That's patented. That's sold. My God, we've sold millions and millions of them around the world.
And where do I buy this? I just turned 50.
It's called Pick Me Up, and you can buy it. Well, of course, you can buy it from our website. We ship for free anywhere in the country, which is purestylegirlfriends.com. Or we're sold, you know, in thousands of retailers. We're on Amazon, we're on Bare Necessities, we're on Her Room, we're on the Home Shopping Network. So lots of places for to buy those
awesome
types of things. So, yeah, but back to your point of listening to your customers, I think that's exactly right. You know, if you listen to your customers, they will tell you what they want, they will tell you what they need, they will tell you what they're missing. And then it's our job to fill that void and fill that need.
And along the way, asking the right questions, right?
Right.
So understand that in an education and training company like mine is, or like your first was, providing education and training can be done in many different formats. Do they want to read? Do they want to listen? Do they want to watch? Do they want to look at pretty pictures? It's
right.
up to you to know enough to ask that question, or the feedback you're going to get isn't necessarily going to help solve the problem better.
I think that's a really smart point. I completely agree with you. And sometimes it needs to be a hybrid of all of the above,
mm-hmm.
right? It can't just be one solution. So building on your point, for my e-learning company, we actually did all of the above. We had the first webcasting.
Yeah.
We had the first, yeah, exactly. With Pure Style, I don't just do the three S's of breasts, right? We now have a for fashion disasters. We have nipple covers. We have fashion tape. We have bra extenders. We have straps that convert the back of your bra so you don't see them under, you know, convert your regular bra to a T-strap bra. And then we expanded beyond that because not you don't necessarily, you know, we're not walking around all day long thinking about our girls. Right? I mean, we're busy women on the go. So we have things like purse organizers and little handbag hangers to hang your handbag on a table so you don't have to sit it on the floor. And so once we started talking to our customers and listening to their needs, we said, oh, gosh, you know, wardrobe solutions doesn't necessarily mean lingerie. It means anything that makes our life better. It means makes anything that makes us feel more confident when we walk out of the house. So, and a lot of those ideas weren't even mine. They came from our customers. Our customers, to both of your points, our customers started helping develop our product roadmap.
So let me just translate for our listeners. What you really just said is when you want your business to grow, don't go out and find a different group of customers that you have to market to, that you have to bring into your world. Go to the same customers and find out what other problems you can help them to solve. It truly improves the lifetime value of a customer, and in your case, Juliana, exponentially. Holy cow. The highest cost in any business is the cost of getting a new customer. It is way cheaper to continue to sell the same customer over and over and over again. Even
it's
cheaper
so
still.
Can I build on that really quick, and then you get back to that point? It's not just cheaper to sell to them, you know, or a higher return on investment, but you get leverage in marketing, right? So you're
yep.
not creating another distribution channel, another marketing initiative, another advertising campaign or PR, whatever you're going to do. So your I call it closest to cash. You, and that's all we care about as entrepreneurs. Money in minus money out equals money left over, right? And
yep.
we care about the money left over part. So, and what's closest to cash, building exactly on your point, is leveraging those customers to sell more products to the same type of person.
And that's exactly where I was going. Leverage, right? It's always about leverage. And as you do exactly what we're talking about, continue to sell those same customers other solutions that you can provide, doing it in a way that gets them to talk about you. So I'm not saying start an affiliate program and pay them to bring their friends. What I'm saying is touch their lives at such a deep level that when they talk about themselves, they can't help but bring up your name. With the solutions that you're providing, clearly people are going to get comments like, holy cow, your girls look really good today. What did you do?
Well, they might not be that direct. They might say, you look great. Or they might say something about your energy, right? Because, and this is building on your point, but I want to sort of touch on it in a different way, which is you just said, which I thought was really smart. You just said touching their lives in a really personal way. So with Pure Style Girlfriends, our mission, and Linda had asked a long time ago, how do you get started? I think it's really important that you have a mission, you have a vision. What is it you're trying, how are you trying to make the world a better place, right? For Pure Style Girlfriends, our mission is not to sell adhesive bras. That is not our mission. Our mission is to empower women to feel our best. Because when you walk out of that door and you feel great, everything changes. Your energy changes. You stand up straighter. Your posture is better. Your smile is brighter. You're ready to take on the world. And so when, Janine, to your point, you said it touched their life in a personal way. They might not say, wow, your boobs look bigger. Your boobs look perkier. People aren't quite that direct. What they'll say is, you know, there's something about you today. You look great. Right? That's touching them in a personal way because that is touching them in their heart. It's building their confidence. It's helping bring out the best that's within them. That's the connection right there. And that's the mission.
And the likelihood of that woman who's getting this wonderful compliment of telling this friend of theirs exactly what's different, bringing up your brand, Pure Style Girlfriend, is very high at that point, is it not?
Absolutely. It depends. If she's in a work environment, she's going to say thank you. But then she's going to go home and talk about it with her girlfriends, right? If she's out to dinner with a girlfriend, she's going to say, oh, my God, you won't believe what I'm doing. You know, it's fabulous, right? And she's going to absolutely become a brand ambassador. And
she's not doing that to make money as an affiliate. She's doing that just because her life has been touched in such a profound way. You want to build your business around how you make that happen on purpose. To me, it's the highest form of leverage you can get.
I agree. Customers, they're your smartest money. There's no investor that's going to be able to tell you that. Only someone that's actually using your products or buying your services. They're the ones who are going to be able to give you that insight and that guidance. And as entrepreneurs, you know, to close out that topic, you know, we're focused yet flexible. Yes, we have a goal. Yes, we have a product line. Yes, we have a vision. But we're also listening all the time, and we're responding to the feedback that we're getting, the good and, more importantly, the bad. The bad's really insightful. It's not telling you you're not going to be successful. It's telling you how to become successful. It's like when you were a kid in school and you were in the second grade and you were learning math and you made a mistake. You said 4 + 3 = 6. It's not because you're stupid, right? It's not because you'll never go on to learn math. It's because you're learning. You needed the feedback. No, 4 + 3 = 7. Oh, got it, right? So 14 + 3, that equals 17. Now I get it. Now you can go on to grow into different things. So that feedback, learning that cycle is super important.
And Juliana, it's critical, isn't it, that we take what we're passionate about and turn it into a product, into a service, into a program, and take it out into the marketplace, into the laps and hands and minds of our prospective customers in order to get them to really vote with their taking action, with their signing up, with their purchasing. Otherwise, you can spend an infinite amount of time in your own head, sitting back in your little lab, refining and refining and refining, because you think that's what's needed, and that's not a business.
Yeah, I agree. I actually call that the beaver syndrome. You're beavering away by yourself. You're a very, very busy beaver, right? And you're building your little dam, and you're building your little dam, and you're building your little dam. But you need the dam to work, right? So you don't want to spend too much time beavering away by yourself. You really need to get the feedback, the good and the bad, because that's where the growth is going to happen. So listen to those customers, get products out there, get samples out there, go from there. So I think that's a really good launching pad.
So I know we have some women who are listening thinking to themselves, why did you go after these small little tools when you could have developed Spanx or something like Spanx?
Well, Spanx was already in business. In fact, you talked about strategy and whatnot. It's very funny that you bring up Spanx. So there's at the time that I – let me give you the chronology. So I started Fire Solutions when I was 26 years old in 1999, June of 99, I started that company. And then – so you don't have to do that math. That makes me 42 in a few weeks. I'll be 42 years old. And then I ran that company. I sold it for the second time in 2006. In 2006 as well, I also, after selling Fire, went on to start Pure Style Girlfriends. It takes about a year to get a business off the ground. So for all of you out there that are just starting a company, don't think you're going to be profitable making a kajillion dollars in 3 months. It's definitely, it takes a year to get anything started. And then by 2007, we were sold in 300 stores. And to bring up your Spanx analogy and also to loop back to our earlier conversation about working with bigger companies, my strategy when I first started Pure Style Girlfriends was we are a solution for the waist up. At the time, Spanx was, it was before Spanx had bras and whatnot, Spanx was a solution for the waist down, right? Tummy shaping, hip shaping, et cetera. And so I went to the distributors that were selling Spanx. And I said, listen, if your retailers are selling solutions for the waist down, they're probably going to be interested in solutions for the waist up. And each of those distributors said, you're right. And so we, I had our first round of trade shows, Fashion Week, they call them, in August of 2007. And by Christmas time, we were in 300 stores, and a year later, we were in 1,000 stores. So that strategy worked really well, and that's tying back to our initial part of our conversation. How do you partner with strategic alliances, big players that aren't going to crush you? Well, I was in between the elephant's toes. I wasn't trying to do shapewear against Spanx. I was doing something that was complementary to Spanx.
And you just pointed out something so so illuminating, because embedded in the story you just shared is the fact that you knew your industry, you knew your market, you knew your players, you knew your influencers. You knew where you needed to be, even in startup mode, in order to start building the relationship, so Fashion Week and so on. In your industry, there were some very critical places to be and conversations to be having, even in the earliest startup mode. It isn't...
Yeah.
After you've sold $1 million, then go hang out there.
Correct. In fact, what I did is I started selling. I had one or two samples of each product, and I took them to Fashion Week in each major city. So in New York, Chicago, Atlanta, Dallas, and LA in August. And then we wrote orders. We got customers to say, yes, I'll buy it. And then I went into production in China and started, and we started shipping November 1st was our first ship date of 2007. So that took my cost of capital way down. So instead of going out and manufacturing, you know, 5,000 pairs of nipple covers and 10,000 bras and all those kinds of things, I waited to listen to the customers to make sure they were willing to buy before I went into production.
And so
now, with that said, I just want to be very clear on that. I don't know if it's technically a law, but it's certainly a best practice and a rule, at least in my industry, in fashion and intimate apparel and accessories. You don't charge the customer until the day you ship. So I had orders from customers, but I didn't have their money until after we shipped them their goods, or the day. The day we shipped their goods, we charged their credit card. So I did have to float that capital, but it's a short amount of time. It was for 4 months or so that I was floating the capital. So I think that's important, because I don't think it's, I mean, it depends, of course, on your industry, but it's, I would question the ethics of charging a customer for a service that you are not going to render for many, many months in the future. Because the reality is, in production, things change. Just because you think you can manufacture something in the end doesn't mean it gets produced. So you want to make sure you're not actually charging customers until the day products are being shipped to them.
Right, and in the info marketing world, people who are listening to this program are very familiar with the fact that you essentially have 30 days to give value if someone's given you their money. So that value can take place in all sorts of formats. It can be an e-book. It can be a live webinar. It can be, an interview series while waiting for the program itself or a members area to be set up and so on. But it's such a key point that, yes, you can go out and, quote, sell, pre-sell, but you need to know in your industry what the standards are for when you actually must give value and must deliver when creating that economic transaction. Thank you so much for putting that into the conversation. It's really important, because, particularly when we've shared so many different ways of thinking differently about, where's the source of money and how to go about staging and timing, thinking about not only the launch or the expansion of a business, but how to actually scale and grow that business. And you've done that in now a couple of different industries. Are there different learnings that applied only to one industry and not the other? When we're looking at entrepreneurship, there's some real common factors to being successful as that leader of a business.
Well, I certainly think strategy, the widgets are, of course, different, but the strategy of how you grow a company is very, very similar. So, again, it gets back to the strategy piece of, what is the mission of this business? How are we going to achieve it? Whether it's a tangible good or an intangible good or a service, how are we going to differentiate ourselves in the competitive landscape? What does the competitive landscape look like? How are we going to make money, right? You got to ask that right up front. How are we making money? Is it, I was talking to another entrepreneur, just last week, was asking me for guidance on a new online dating company. And my questions for him were, nothing's tying together. You're telling me that you want to market, using strategy A, but where is that in your finances? I don't see your marketing strategy in your pro forma financials. And how does that then tie to your overall growth strategy? Right? Like all three of these things, the marketing, the profit and loss, how the money is coming in and how the money is being spent, and the delivery all need to tie together. It's a pyramid that's building. So let me give you an example with Pure Style Girlfriends because Fire Solutions was so long ago. I'd have to dust off the cobwebs in my brain. But with Pure Style Girlfriends, we think about things as follows. We say, okay, we've got our cost of goods sold. How much does it cost to make an item? It costs this much. Well, it's either made, our products are made, some are made in the United States, some are made in China. I have then a cost of goods sold, but I have a landed cost, which is how much does it take to get from wherever in the world this is being manufactured to my warehouse in LA? You have to add that in right up front, because people get all excited when they start thinking about things being cheap in some way or another, but then they forget the total cost of production. That might mean your time, that might mean duties or shipping, that might mean other technology or infrastructure to support that item. It'll be different for each company, but I think having the fully loaded cost of your goods is a really critical number to have your arms around. Then underneath that, you need to be thinking about marketing. How are you going to market to these customers? Are you going to do advertising? Are you going to do public relations? Do you want to be a direct-to-consumer play? Does that mean you're going to be doing Google advertising? How are you, when you think about the growth of your business in terms of revenue, how is the marketing supporting that? And then, and sort of go down through the line. Now, how am I going to service my customers? Is this a technology business? Do I need to have 24/7 support? Maybe yes, maybe no. How many languages do I need to have? For example, with Pure Style, all of our packaging is in English and French because we ship to Canada. So you know, do I need to have somebody speak French in-house to support them? No, we'll have a Canadian distributor. But, you know, those are the types of things you need to think through. So, and that's important for a few reasons. One, it's important for pricing. You need to make sure that you're pricing your products correctly. But two, it's important because I said earlier, money in minus money out equals money left over. You need to make sure that the money left over part is a positive number, right? What we don't want to see are losses. So we need to make sure that all of those details from concept, from conceptualizing your product, product development, that's a cost, sampling, that's a cost, whether, and it could be tangible or intangible, right? Even if you're developing your first website, there's a cost to that. Hosting, there's a cost to that. So you want to really think through the big picture, and I suggest to entrepreneurs that they do that in two ways. One, they do a top-down approach, and two, they do a bottom-up approach. And let me just explain what I mean by that a little bit. A top-down approach is when you think about things globally. So, for example, I might say there are approximately 300 million women in America. Of them, approximately a third are between the ages of 18 and, you know, 70. Maybe it's more than that, but I'm not looking at my numbers right now. I'm just trying to give you a case study. Maybe half. So 150 million women in America, let's say half of them are between the ages of 18 and 70, so that gives me 75 million. If I want to get 1% of that market, right, how am I going to do that? 1% of 750 million. Right? And you start trickling down. If 1% of 75 million people buy my product and each product has a profit margin of X dollars, that will get me to this revenue. Okay, great. And I now back that up by year. I'm going to get, you know, 1,000 people this year and 5,000 people in year two and 10,000 people in year three and 50,000 people in year four. That's a top-down approach. A bottom-up approach is if I say, okay, how many, you know, if I get, I've got 10 products that I'm trying to sell, and each product is, you know, has a profit margin of, I'm going to make this up, $5, right, just for round number's sake. So how many products do I need to sell to be able to get to my goal? And how am I going to do that? Oh, gosh, you know, you start adding all these numbers up. I need to sell 100,000 units in order to make a profit. How am I going to sell 100,000 units? Exactly how? Not conceptually, exactly how? I don't mean I'll do trade shows. I mean I'm going to go to Fashion Week 5 times a year in 5 different markets, and I'm going to have a booth in this particular location. That's how I'm going to do it. That's the tactical piece. So having your top-down strategy and your bottom-up strategy, you need to look at it both ways, and they need to tell you the same outcome. If they don't tell you the same outcome, then your assumptions are off somewhere, and you should take a different look at that to make sure that your analysis is correct.
And what you just shared is the same thinking that has to go in whether you are, let's say, an e-training company that's building relationships by face-to-face meetings, as you were doing with FIRE, or you're actually now selling really concrete material things you can hold in your hand, and you're going to Fashion Week, and you're representing it online and doing online marketing using everything that's now available between LinkedIn, Facebook, Google, and all the other platforms for getting the idea of your products and your solutions in front of prospective customers and current customers and so on, you've still got to take that top-down approach and the bottom-up approach and see what assumptions you're using for building your business.
Exactly. I think so. Because, and that's really important to do in the beginning, because you want to make sure that your financial model is sound. As you become more experienced in your industry and as your business starts to have a track record, a lot of this will become more intuitive to you. You'll know these things just naturally. Like I don't sit down and do those numbers. I haven't done those numbers in years because I'm now living and breathing it. I'm now in 16 countries. I'm now in thousands of retail channels. So it's now my strategy is different, right? I'm at a different point in my business. Now, when I think about marketing and growing my business, one of the things that I think about is, okay, I'm growing, but I don't want to compete with my customers, right? So, for example, you talked about Google advertising and whatnot. We actually stopped doing Google advertising because my industry is, you know, it's much more of a niche market, and my large retailers out there, they were already marketing it for us. So what I found when I started looking at Google Analytics is I was competing against myself. I was driving up the cost of advertising on my own products. Does that make any sense? Of course not.
And,
right?
And you just illustrated something really vital, that your original solution was developed by sitting around with the actual end user, your girlfriends. I want mine up and pointing straight forward rather than to the two coasts and so on. And that is how you developed your product. When it came to getting it to market, your customers, your buyers, are retailers and other channels. You're no longer taking on the mantle of marketing to each of 50 million or 170 million women.
Correct. That's right, Linda. You're right. I use those word customers interchangeably. And we use the phrase, to be clearer, end customer, our end user, right, versus our retailer in this industry. And it's the same thing in with fire, for example. Then we had our customers were Merrill Lynch, Morgan Stanley, et cetera, and our end users were their employees. But to your point, which I think is a really smart thing to say, you want to communicate with each of these folks in a different way, and you don't want to be stepping on each other's toes. So if you've got a big customer, right? So, for example, with Merrill Lynch, with Fire Solutions, I wasn't talking directly to their employees. Of course not. Merrill Lynch was doing that. That made sense, right? It wouldn't be appropriate for me to try to talk directly to Merrill Lynch employees. That was something that they were experienced doing. They had the internal systems to do, and they did. Same thing with Pure Style girlfriends. Yes, we go out, we are in we've been in every major magazine, InStyle, Glamour, Allure, Vanity Fair, People's Style Watch. We've been on the Today Show and the Oscars. We do all of that to brand ourselves in the public's eye. But when it comes to direct-to-consumer advertising, we have learned that in my niche, it was not a good use of money to be competing for those advertising dollar spends against our retailers. They were already doing it for us.
And so I guess one question, as I'm looking at the clock and seeing that we're coming to the conclusion of this hour, is there a partnership to craft with your customers where you're influencing how they're going about messaging your product to the end user and so on?
Oh, certainly. I mean, I think our customers, which in this case I'm referring to our retailers, we have very, very close relationships with them, very close. I mean, we talk to them not daily, but certainly weekly, and are always working on messaging, positioning. We're tweaking things constantly. You know, constantly. What if we rephrase this sentence or two on the website, on the retailer's website, to better help consumers understand the products, right? Or what if we do this email campaign? Right now, we're just talking with Amazon about working on an email marketing campaign. That'll come from Amazon, but that we are working together on. So I think that that's a really important thing to do, is to be working closely with those with your retailers or your customers. Your customers should be your friends. You should have that close of a relationship. You should know about their significant others. Do they have children? Do they have pets? Where do they like to vacation? What do they like to do? Do they drink red wine, white wine, or beer, or nothing at all? Who are these people? Connect with them. Understand them. Know what's important to them. Know if they're having a bad week or a good week, and care. Because people buy from people. If they care about you and you care about them, and I'm not superficially care, I mean in your heart, care about them. They will turn to you. They will trust you more. your relationship will blossom. And if you're just another vendor, you're easily replaced. So remember that a partnership or any relationship, it comes from within, you know, and building that trust is not just on one facet. It's not just on a business side. It's really getting to know these folks. Did they just have a child? Is it a boy or a girl? How is their partner doing? Right? That's what I mean by connecting with your customer. And your relationship will get you a lot further.
Juliana, I cannot thank you.
We are out of time. Sorry, go ahead.
I was going to say, I can't thank you enough for what you shared. And I think the company leaders, whether they're new entrepreneurs or building businesses, who are able to have you as their mentor are incredibly fortunate. And I thank you so much for coming and sharing your experience and insights with our folks today.
Oh, well, thank you both for having me. I've really enjoyed being on air with you. And, you know, I hope this session was helpful to our listeners out there. And I wish everybody the best of luck. It's been a lot of fun being on air with you. So thank you again for the invitation.
Thank you. And Linda, you want to remind everyone one more time where they can find Juliana?
They can find her at purestylegirlfriends.com.
Thank you again, and Linda and I will be back next week. Have a great week, everybody.
Join us Tuesday at noon Eastern for the next episode of Breakthrough Directions, from relationship marketing to business success.